Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 353. It's a bit of a CEO, managing director chatathon today. Got three companies on. First off the taxi rank, from the US of A, it's Randy Connolly from Northcote Energy, managing director there. I also have, from Israel, founder, chairman, CEO, Gideon Tahan of Servision. And then, in London, I spoke to Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals. So it's quite a full show. By the if you want to get a CEO on the show, the best way to do it is get them to contact me directly or their PR company directly. They can email me, then we can sort out a time. Because I've got a bit of a backlog of people asking. And it's very hard for me to chase them up and chase them sort of range dates. Because sometimes I get rebuffed anyway. But if you get them to contact me, that shows they're keen to get on the podcast. So that's the best way. So if you want to hear, you know, CEO chatting and you can ask them questions and all that, do that, please. That would help me out, you know, immeasurably. Thank you very much for that. I also have today's penny stock with potential, as suggested by you. Just click the link here at sharepickers.com, fill out the form, and your suggestion could be on in the next few days. And this podcast is dedicated to 2_N_V, who gave me a 5-star rating and cracking review on iTunes. I'll read out later. This podcast is dedicated to you. And if you'd like a podcast dedicated to you, do the same thing. Just click the link here at sharepickers.com and I'll dedicate a podcast to you. I'll read out that review later. And joining me live from the US of A, Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, Randy, by the way.
Thank you, Justin.
It's Managing Director of Northcote Energy, Randy. And it's good because obviously it's a day off for you out there. What will you be planning today, Randy?
You know, Thanksgiving is one of our top traditional holidays here. So later on, I'll be eating a bunch of turkey and probably falling asleep for a nice nap on the couch while watching some American football games.
Sounds ideal. Perfect. Okay, Randy, I know you've been on before, but just for people who haven't heard you on before, can you just give us a roundup as to what Northcote Energy is all about?
Absolutely. Northcote Energy, we're a AIM-listed, obviously, historically U.S.-focused oil and gas company. We have a great project we're developing at Choke's Creek Field in Louisiana, where in September we completed a well that tested over 360 barrels of equivalent per day production, capable of producing at a sustained 250 plus barrels a day, with a number of other very low risk, low geologic risk locations to be completed near term. In addition to that, we're also involved in the opening up of the Mexican energy sector, but the near-term cash flow driver is Shoads Creek, and that's where our near-term focus is.
Okay, excellent stuff. Well, let's get on to some questions I've had submitted from private investors here. First of all, it's a bit of a tricky one. Are you losing focus with all these irons in the fire?
No, we've got a more robust team. I think a lot of people may have the impression it's just me doing a bunch of things. You know, the primary two initiatives that we as a company are focused on and responsible for driving forward is development of the Shoads Creek field, which is by far our number one priority at this time. Second to that is completion of a remediation facility that we're developing in Tabasco, Mexico. We have a very capable local partner down there with whom we're working. Those are the two initiatives that we as a company are responsible for. Now, everything else that we have some exposure to is alongside another company whose highly capable team is primarily responsible for driving that initiative. For instance, you know, we have the right to participate along with CEB Resources in an eighth of any projects they take in Indonesia. Well, obviously, they don't need us to help them get those projects in Indonesia. We just simply have the right to look at any projects they get and decide whether we want a piece or not. So, Northcote has two projects that it is focused on. We're more than capable of driving both forward. But of everything in our portfolio, Schoep's Creek is, because it is the project that's going to put this company over the top of over the crest of the hill and get us cash flow positive nearest term.
Okay, and you recently done a placing to raise some money there. Can you take us through, you know, why you raised money, what it's for?
Yeah, absolutely. What's great about Schoep's Creek Field and what we've done that's maybe a little bit atypical for a junior oily is that instead of having a portfolio comprised of very small, primarily non-operated interests and a number of wells, we have our mission since we listed, and really my view of the way you create value in the oil business in the first place is this. A long time ago, I've come to the conclusion that, if you look at any oil company's portfolio of wells, Justin, whether it be Exxon or BP or, Northcote, most your distribution of wells in terms of their financial performance tends to follow what a statistician would call a normal distribution curve. That is, kind of looks like a hill, and it's sort of centered around the mean. And what that means is that if I have 100,000 wells, in a company, I think that probably 20 to 30% of those wells are certain losers. Maybe 30 to 50% of those wells are marginal. Maybe you get your money back. Maybe you lose a little. Maybe you make a little. And really, at the end of the day, I believe that companies make money off the 20 to 30% that are real barn burner wells. And so if you ask me, the key to building a highly profitable oil company is to avoid letting those marginal and money-losing wells kill you until you find an asset that has extraordinary potential and you understand the geology so well and you demonstrate it through drilling that you know you've got a number of very low-risk wells that need to be exploited. We believe firmly that that is what we've got at Schoep's Creek Field at this point in time. We acquired this asset in 2014. We completed our first well in September. That first well confirmed what we thought about the Frio Zone. Based on other subsurface data we've got, we know we've got a number of other locations that we can go out and drill, and we're going to have extraordinary financial results in the current financial oil price environment. Now, excuse me, it does cost some money to do that. What's imperative, I believe that fundamentally long-term share price outperformance for Northcote will be driven by solid cash flow positive company. Having completed the Lutchermore number 20 in September, we are now spending some money on infrastructure, upgrading our saltwater disposal capacity, upgrading the amount of storage we can store on location, adding electric service to the field. This is in a fairly remote area. There's no electricity. That will allow us to operate the field more cost-effectively going forward. With the infrastructure investment we are now making, this field will essentially be plug and play on the next several wells we're going to drill. Now, if an investor looks back at what a blockbuster well that Lettramore number 20 really was, we spent about $1 million to drill and complete a well which tested over 300 at the peak rate over 350 BOE a day. When you compare that with other blockbuster wells that companies in the UK and elsewhere have announced in recent weeks, dollar for dollar, that's as good as any and better than most. And so, you know, what we're doing with this investment, Justin, yes, it did require a little bit of incremental dilution, but this investment is going to empower us to really drive production growth. And I believe that'll drive share price performance.
Okay. And so as far as Schultz Creek is concerned, where are you? Because someone's questioned you. Just to avoid confusion, is Schultz Creek LM20 generating cash now?
A little bit. We haven't had the infrastructure to produce. We have sold oil, but having said that, we haven't been able to produce it anywhere near a peak rate because of the aforementioned lack of infrastructure. So not only will this infrastructure allow us to produce this well at the maximum rate that it's capable of, but it will also allow us to add in future wells as well. The infrastructure we're putting in place with this capital investment will support total field production of over 1,500 barrels a day.
Okay, and how long will it take until you get all that infrastructure in there, do you think?
Probably 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. Not long at all then. And so what is the break-even cost, someone's asking, at Schultz Creek? Or do you know what it'll be?
Yeah, absolutely. The cash cost, your cash production cost for a well that's already completed is about $10 a barrel out of Schultz Creek. In our case, and one of the things we announced the other day is that when we acquired Schultz Creek, we had a production payment, a per barrel production payment due to Aminex PLC, from whom we purchased the field, that was $10 a barrel. So if you take our $10 cash cost and you add that $10 a barrel production payment, that would make the break even, cash oil price, you'd have to be realizing, once you factor in royalties and stuff, you'd be needing to probably make somewhere in the $27 to $30 a barrel range. Now, one of the things that we did in conjunction with this placement was we went back to Aminex. They have a very big incentive to see us develop this field. Because they knew that we were going to get on with doing what was necessary, i.e. putting in place the infrastructure, not just to peak out production from the LM20, but to drive future wells and development activity, they agreed to accommodate us by lowering, by adjusting the production payment based on oil price. At current oil prices, our production payment to Aminex is about $2 a barrel. So if you take $2 a barrel in the production payment, combine it with our $10 a barrel cash cost, that means this field's cash flow positive at anything over $12 a barrel. Now, when you factor in the cost of drilling a well, the number of barrels that we expect a well to generate, we estimate that to recover our full investment and break even, we need somewhere around $20 a barrel on these Frio wells, or we need to realize somewhere around $20 a barrel. So, you know, bottom line is this project looks great at current oil prices. This is good old-fashioned conventional oil. We don't need to drill it horizontally. We don't need to frack it. All we needed was we need a place to put the oil, and that was one of our challenges. Is that while Schultz Creek does have some infrastructure, the area where we drilled the Letcher Moore number 20, which is the same area in which we're going to drill 3 to 4 more super low risk wells over the next year or so, that area is 1.5 miles from the main tank battery. It didn't have electricity. When you produce oil, you get a lot of water. You got to be able to do something with that water. You can truck it. It costs you $3.50 a barrel to truck versus for a modest investment in a saltwater disposal well, we can get our cost of disposing water down to 25 cents a barrel. So this investment we're making now is making all of that possible. It will support up to 1,500 barrels a day. It'll support peak production on the LM20 plus 3 to 4 more wells out there. With this infrastructure in place, there's nothing to stop us from drilling and adding wells sequentially during the course of next year.
Okay, and so is Schultz Creek, is this the main driver now, or is this a sort of bridge cash flow for the Mexican application? Where does the focus lie eventually?
Well, first of all, let me start by saying at the end of the day, I have no interest. If investors think that I'm one of these guys that's just going to go out and dawdle about and raise money so that I get paid every year, I have no interest in doing that, Justin. I'm here to build a big company, profitable company, valuable company. If we don't cross that threshold during the course of the next year, I've got no problem with the board replacing me with somebody who will, because my goal here is to build a big, powerful, profitable company. Now, Schultz Creek is an important part of doing that. It's the part that we've got immediate traction on. It's the part where we will get the most bang for the buck in terms of generating positive cash flow for this company over the next 12 months. And in its own right, there are two transactions. Anybody who wants to go out and spend a little bit of time on Google, there are two deals. One, you could look up a company called Pintail, P-I-N-T-A-I-L. They bought 1,300 barrels a day immediately in the area of Schultz Creek. They paid $44 million for it. That deal was about 10 to 12 months ago. A little bit further back, maybe another 6-8 months back, a company called El Paso sold their Louisiana assets, including a big portion of them were in the immediate Schultz Creek area. They sold, I believe it was between 2,800 and 3,000 barrels a day for $150 million to an investment group based out of New York. So those two numbers show you that production in this area has real, tangible value to sophisticated, smart money investors in the United States. We've got a hell of a well in the Letcher Moore number 20 that will be, in a few weeks, once the infrastructure is complete, producing at a couple hundred barrels a day. I've got 3 to 4 more locations out there. Play with some math. Not every well has to be a blockbuster like the LM20 for us to get to some very impressive production numbers over the course of the next year or so. Schultz Creek's going to create real, tangible, hardcore value for this company. Now, yes, it will also generate a lot of cash flow that can fund a lot of our other initiatives. But the other thing I want to mention, Justin, is this. One of the things about North Dakota is I've got a lot. I'm going to call them wild cards. We've got an eighth of anything CEB does in Indonesia. Despite the fact shares are suspended right now, I'm a big believer in Dave Whitby. I think there's going to be value there. We also hold 38 million warrants in MX Oil. If I have a solidly cash flow positive company, Justin, because I've got 2 or 3 or 4 wells producing at Schultz Creek, I can use these windfalls, if and as we realize them, to do things to directly add value. We can consider share buybacks, we can consider dividends, we can consider a lot of things. So I think we've got a high impact portfolio. I think there's a lot of ways to win in Northcote shares, both through initiatives that are core to what we do on a day-to-day basis, as well as through relationships that give us a lot of upside to some really exciting stories in Mexico, Indonesia, and potentially other places.
Marvellous. All right, Rennie. Well, listen, thanks very much, fella. Loads of information there. If you just finish off here by, you know, giving us a listener who's tuned in now and is listening to you and thinks, oh, yeah, I like the sound of Randy, give us, you know, three reasons why somebody should invest in Northcote Energy.
I'll tell you what. Three reasons are this. It's taken a lot of work to get here. We finally identified an asset that has all the right characteristics. We've demonstrated it. We've de-risked it. This company, right now at its current valuation, we're on the cusp of going seriously cash flow positive. We've got the asset that's going to drive us there, and I think that once the market appreciates the asset we've got at Choates Creek, I personally believe there's a big disconnect between our market value and what the underlying value of the assets of this company are worth. So that's number one. Number two, as I mentioned, once we've achieved near term that cash flow positive situation, we've got a lot of wild cards in the portfolio, whether it be with high profile companies like SEB Resources or LMAX Oil, warrants or participation rights. We've got a lot of things in our portfolio that can generate potential windfall gains. And, you know, three, we've got our own Mexican strategy we're working very hard on implementing and hope to have some positive updates for the market in due course.
Okay. One other question I just saw there, is someone just said, do you need any more funding in the next 6 months?
Not for what we're currently contemplating. I mean, and like I said, our focus right now is on Choates Creek. Our plan to drill that second well, and this I'm remiss for not mentioning this earlier, we are in active discussions with respect to our Oklahoma portfolio. Do anticipate having something announceable there in the near term. We believe with the infrastructure in place, the ability to be able to produce the 20 at peak rates, and proceeds freed up from non-core assets, we think that we're in a pretty good position to get that second well drilled out at Choates Creek. With a 70% interest in the LM20 plus the next well, with the kind of production rates these wells are capable of, yeah, we think that gets us pretty firmly cash flow positive. So we feel pretty good about where we are at the moment, and we just need to go out and get it done.
Randy, thank you for taking time out of your Thanksgiving this, festivity celebrations. Really appreciate it, and speak soon, fella.
Very good. Thanks, Justin. Bye-bye.
Okay, it's time for today's Penny Stock with Potential, as suggested by Money Sponge. Money Sponge has been quite busy there on my website, suggest a few stocks, actually. Very good. Thanks for getting involved. You know, your interaction really helps with the podcast. And so what's the company? It's Sirica Energy, SQZ. What does the company do? Oil and gas. Would you say long, short, or medium-term investment? Medium to long. How many shares does the company have in issue? 250 million. What's the current price and market cap of the company? It's around about 8.5 pence, 21 million market cap. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, cash, close to market cap in bank. Number two, four to four and a half thousand barrels of oil production, around £2 million per month. And number three, just increased stake in Columbus asset, and in advanced talks with BG to use Lomond platform to bring Columbus into production, potentially upping production to around about 11,000 barrels of oil per day. So that's Sirica Energy, SQZ. Please do your own research on this. Okay, this is just a stepping stone to start your research. Don't buy anything based solely on a tip or a recommendation here on the podcast. Joining me on the podcast right now is founder, chairman, and CEO of Servision, Gideon Taha. Is it Gideon Tahan? Is that correct? Am I saying that correctly, Gideon?
Yeah, that's correct. Gideon Tahan.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, Gideon. And you were recommended by a sort of friend, a fellow investor, who's a fan of your company. And so, first of all, obviously, he gave an outline when he came on the podcast. But for anyone who hasn't or didn't hear that podcast, can you give us a brief outline as to what your company does, please?
Okay. The company is specialized on video surveillance, specifically for vehicles and base station location. Okay, we have the best compression in the world that can allow you to transmit live video over a narrowband, which means over 5-10 kilobit. So the vehicle is always on connect, and that's the most reason that all the cash in transit in the UK, which is Loomis, Brinks, the Royal Mail, and G4S, using our solution. Also, the tobacco industry using our solution, the fire alarm using our solution. So we have really the best compression in the world that allowed you to transmit live video over GSM.
I see. So you mentioned a couple of clients there. Can you go through again? So big names in this company, you said Royal Mail, G4S. What others have you got there, Gideon?
They have us installed on the vehicle, on the cash in transit vehicle, our solution between 4 to 8 cameras, okay?
Yeah.
And they are transmitting live video to the monitoring station. Also, that of course, they're recording for about a few months' time all the activity. And the management can always be in touch and control the vehicle and secure the vehicle.
Oh. That's amazing. And you're saying you are the only company with this kind of definition playback, are you?
We are the only company that allowed you to transmit real live video over GSM in the world.
Wow, that's good.
Yes, we have over 50,000 installations worldwide.
All right.
Just in case, yeah.
So there's a question here. Is there further interest from the UK airports after initial deal with Gatwick? Can you explain the Gatwick deal, first of all?
Absolutely, absolutely. We are now on a pilot with the Manchester airport as well. And yesterday we installed them a pilot and they are very, very satisfied with the solution. I do believe that all the other airports will using our solution as well.
Wow, that's good. So, and where do they use them? They use them in the actual airports or on transport? Explain a bit more about that, if you could, Gideon.
Okay, it's in and out. There is, you know, different department on the airport. Yeah. There is the vehicles that are driving inside the airport, and there are vehicles that are driving outside the airport. So they use them both.
I see. Excellent stuff. As yet, can you explain fully the maintenance contract with the recent logistics contract win you had?
Okay, I'm refusing by mention the name of the company, but you can imagine it's one. I can just telling you that this is one of the biggest fleet companies in the world. Okay, so they just starting with 240 or 220,000 pounds, but we are now expecting more orders on the service contract. I do believe that this relationship will make a huge income to the company in the coming, let's say, in the near future.
Okay, good. Take us through your last set of results, for example. So can you say what your revenue was, how much cash you have, etc., please?
Okay. By the way, just to inform you about the income in the UK,
yeah.
We just let's say that we starting the company a few months ago, and we have a very nice group there, which is few people with managing the company there. And just to inform you, for the last few months, we have over 600 or 700,000 pound income from few months, but then. the let's say the big advantage on those contracts, it's not just selling one time. This is a contract for 36 months revenues, recurring revenues for the data and the maintenance as well. So that, you know, it's a change of strategy of the company, which was just selling units, and now we are not just selling, we also promote a maintenance. By the way, we are doing now the same in the United States as well. We're just starting now the activity in the United States. We are building a big group there that will offer, and we believe that this will make a huge income. It's the advantage on that, and that in that case that you have your local group, because a lot of companies, they like our product, they like the solution, they want also a local service, local maintenance, and that's what holding the company at the past, not getting a huge contract in the UK or in the United States. So the strategy of the company now, that find, let's say, the strategic country for us and build a subsidiary, a local subsidiary of the company there. So we starting with the UK. We have an office in Florida, Miami, but it's not for maintenance and service. It's just a local selling. But now we are building also all the maintenance and the local service as well.
I see. So you initially have the money coming in from the sale of your video equipment, and then you have the recurring revenue of the maintenance. Is that right?
Exactly. I can telling you, but if I calculate the income from the DHL, sorry about it, about let's say the the customer in the UK, we have a huge margin on this contract, but I can't tell you exactly what is the margin there.
Okay. So essentially, it's very valuable. The maintenance contracts are very valuable with a high margin. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Okay, marvelous. So what's your ambitions then, Gideon, for the company? I mean, at the moment, let me just check. Where are you? Sort of market capitalization is around about £3.5 million. If you're talking sort of, you know, a couple of years down the line, maybe 5 years down the line, what's your ambition for Servision?
I'll tell you what, the market value of the company is it's a joke, because we just have on the 2015 asset report of the company, which made by a third party company, and they value the company about $92 million. Okay. And I can tell you, as my experience, I have been sold a company about 15 years ago to U.S. company for around $100 million. If I compare this company, Servision company, to my previous company, which we call Gadline, this company have a huge potential, much better than my previous company. And if my previous company have been sold for $100 million, I think this can be valued much, much more.
So what kind of intellectual property security do you have around your product? What's to stop, say, someone in China doing the same kind of thing as your product? Is it protected?
Just absolutely. We have to patent, but just to inform you, we are selling to China. Okay?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's not just a standalone unit. It's a solution. You have the management, you have the proxy server, you have the control center, you have SV monitor. It's a solution. In China, just for your information, in China, they are expertise, to make a copyright for a standalone unit. But once when it's come to be a system, it's very, very complicated for them. And now we are selling to China as well. We just shipped a new version of our solution, which is high definition solution, to China 2 weeks ago. We have a big customer for the train company, for the bus companies. So we are activating China as well.
Okay. In fact, take us through quickly the markets you're in at the moment, Gideon, and hopefully the ones you're hoping to get into in the short term. So which markets are you now establishing yourself, and tell us ones you're hopefully going to establish yourself in.
Okay, the market that we are activating now is the mobile market, which is the vehicles. And we also, it's not just the cash in transit and the alcohol and tobacco industry. It's the bus companies, it's the taxis companies. I can tell you we are on the final negotiation with a taxi company in the UK. Hopefully next week, maybe we'll close something with a big taxi company. We're offering, by the way, to the taxi company, it's not just a live video. It's also hotspot for the passenger that can browsing on the internet as well. So you have all the kind. You have GPS, you have video, and you have the hotspot as well. And the very important point is that we are not using a big amount of data, which means if you are just putting about 500 megabits, which is nothing now in the UK, you can survive all the month. If you compare to any other company that trying to transmit over GSM, they need at least 10 or 15 gigabytes. So that saves a lot of money to our customer in the field.
Yeah. So geographically, you're in the UK, you're in the US, and you're in China. Anywhere else you're in? Any other countries at the moment?
Geographically, we are, let's say, most of the world. We have in Brazil, we just installed them now about 500 buses. We have in Portugal that we already announced with ENA company. We just send them 150 units for bus company. We have TEDAS in the Netherlands, which is about 200 units. They just order about 300 units. So we are, our position is in, let's say we have a subsidiary in the UK and United States now, but we are selling almost worldwide. We're selling to China, we're selling to Africa, we're selling to South America, we're selling to the UK and United States. And this is very, very important point. Now the market is very, very hot because, you know, all the prices on the ICEs and all others, in Paris, for example, just to giving you an idea. In the UK, in the West End, you have cameras any corner. You have all the West End is installed by cameras. They do an underground infrastructure and they put a fiber optic all over the West End. Okay, yeah. It's a huge amount of expenses to make that, and it takes about a few years. As you, I'm sure that you hear about Paris, and now they get a decision to install a camera over Paris and other big cities in France. So for them, there is two options. The first option is to start the infrastructure, and it takes them about 3-4 years to start with the cameras, or to do it wireless and GSM connection, which can take them just a few months to install all the cities. So we're trying now with our partner in France to convince them to starting using our solution, because our solution can be installed in a pole, in a gardens, in schools, and transmitting live video from the field with no need any infrastructure, and it's much cheaper, much easily, and the result is almost the same.
Yeah, like I see, you're in a fast, I mean, in a huge section of the market. It's very quickly growing and expanding. So it's quite an exciting time for you. Okay, so you're saying, I was just reading a report also, they're saying essentially revenues will be skewed more or towards the second half. Is that right? Because the new model camera you've brought out, is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, well, Gideon, if you can, I mean, you've given us more than enough information to get going on, but if you can, give me three reasons, three short bullet points as to why someone listening right now should invest in Servision.
First of all, the valuation of the company is really nothing. The company is a very stable company, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not, we are almost 15 years company. And there is almost no risk to invest in CERVision. It's just a matter of time when the company will be valued $50 or $100 million. That's my opinion. Okay, as my, I'm one of the big shareholder and big investor in the company. So if you get the asset value of the company, which is about $92 million, that even not my opinion, even it's less than what is the real valuation of the company. I understand, let's say the market was, let's say, upset or non-satisfied with the, let's say we are almost a few years on the market, but now that market, it, you know, it was some delay on the market opening for the vehicles and for the transportation, the buses and everything. In Israel, for example, there is a company with 6,000 buses. They're starting now about 75 buses with us. Of course, all the bus companies using our solution in Israel. So that can giving you an idea, you know, small idea about the market capacity and what we can do in the coming few months and for next year. Or it's just a period of time when the company is just, you know, moving forward and getting the high valuation that we are expecting.
Marvelous. Good, lovely to chat to you, and hopefully you'll come on again soon when you have some more exciting news to tell us. Thanks very much for speaking to us.
Absolutely. We'll come shortly. Don't worry.
This podcast is dedicated to the one, the only, 2_N_V, who gave me a 5-star review and this cracking review on iTunes. And first of all, the title is Awesome Podcast, 5 stars. The host of the show, Justin Waite, is not only a very likeable guy and has such an overall great vibe about him. Thanks so much. Although Justin always says, do your own research, and nothing he says can or should be constituted as investments or trading advice. Thank you. I personally feel he has a passion for the stock market and does genuinely want to help us. Please make better informed decisions when it comes to trading and investing. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do this podcast. I don't do this podcast for money. I do it because I like stocks and shares. I really do. And I don't want anyone, you know, losing money. So please do your own research. Because, you know, if you just go on a tip, guaranteed pretty much, or recommendation without research, I guarantee you lose money. All right, so please don't be fooled by his quirky sense of humor and be led to believe that he is some funny guy. No, I'm not. I'm a complete fool. He happens to have a great understanding of the markets and knows a thing or two about picking winning stocks. Well, I don't know that. He regularly interviews and invites CEOs and successful traders, investors for a chit-chat. Yeah, I like my old chit-chatties. Unfortunately, iTunes only allows up to 5 stars. If it was up to me, then I would give 10 for this show. I really can't rate this podcast highly enough. Awesome podcast. Best regards at 2_N_VR.A. That's the Twitter handle, I think. Thank you very much for that. It's muchos apreciados. And if you like a podcast dedicated to you, please go to sharepickers.com, click the link, it'll take you through to iTunes there, drop a review there, 5-star rating, and I will dedicate a podcast to you. And I've got 115 now, 5-star rating and reviews. Thank you very much. Joining me on the podcast right now is Jerry Martin, Director and Chief Executive Officer of Horizonte Minerals. Thank you for coming on again, Jeremy.
No, good afternoon and good to speak to you again.
Yeah, well, Jeremy, what I like to do, I mean, you've been on before, and so we're almost buddies. You know, you're almost a regular, but you know the score, but there are people listening who probably, you know, have not heard of your company. So if you can give us sort of almost a 1-minute sort of pricey summary for the layman as to what you do, what you're all about.
Absolutely, yeah. Horizonte is focused in Brazil. We're dual listed on the AIM in London and the main TSX in Canada. We've been operating in Brazil for 8 years. We made a nickel laterite discovery in 2010. We acquired the adjacent project from Teck in 2011. Took the combined projects from being a grassroots discovery through to scoping study, pre-feasibility study completed last year. We've drilled around 50,000 meters of diamond drilling, completed metallurgical test work, and 3 weeks ago we announced the acquisition of a project from Glencore, which is adjacent to us in the north. So As of today, we have consolidated 100% of the Araguay nickel district, and we will have one of the largest nickel saprolite projects, which is undeveloped today in the world. So it's a very exciting time for the company.
Yeah, well, that's an amazing asset, isn't it? Considering, you know, at the moment, your market cap is around about 12 million. And so, you know, the environment we're in, Jeremy, I mean, it's a tough environment, isn't it, for any commodity plays?
Absolutely. I mean, it is probably the toughest point I've seen since I've been in the industry. It is obviously a cyclic industry, but we are now sitting at the bottom of the current cycle, and we've been down here for a number of years. The outlook also looks tough. I think the next 12 months is going to be very challenging. We're in a period of oversupply, and the demand side is obviously soft in terms of where China sits. However, as I said, it's a cyclical business. You need to be looking forwards. And where we're at is we've adjusted our strategy over the last 3 or 4 years to the changing market conditions. And Araguay now will be one of the next nickel projects to come online. And it's all about having a project which sits right at the bottom end of the cost curve. It's high grade. You bring the capital back to levels that are financeable. And it's robust up the cost curve. And that's really where we are designing the Araguay project to be.
So when I look at junior sort of explorers and producers, I almost look at an acronym called CASH. And the C in that stands for cash. So, because that's important in this day and age, isn't it? Where if you're not producing it, that's important. But you have cash, don't you?
Yeah, cash is obviously an extremely tough commodity to get in the current junior mining space. We are in a relatively stable position. We've got 3.2 million sterling in the bank, and our spend rate has been adjusted to give us 24 months in terms of active project development. Obviously, we are being very cautious. We're not going to push the project milestones aggressively if we don't believe the next stage of financing is there. And that would be foolish of us as management and board to advance something where there isn't effectively a market at the end of the day. So we're being very cautious, maintaining a robust treasury position while advancing the project on the other side of the fence.
Okay, so let's say I'm listening now. I know nothing whatsoever about mining and exploration, which is not far off from where I actually am. So take me through your company. Take me through the timeline, those milestones you mentioned there. When does it get to production level? At what, you know, ideally?
Yeah, so we're in what's called the sort of the development phase. So it's moved out of being an initial discovery. We then put the first stage of economics around it with the pre-feasibility study that we completed last year. And that gives you a set of costings in terms of cash flow numbers, capital required to plus or minus 20% level. The next stage is to take the project through to full feasibility study. And that is where you've taken your cost base down to plus or minus 10%. And you effectively put that study in front of the banks. And that's the stage that you are arranging the capital financing to actually build the project. And we aim to be in that position at the end of next year. There'll then be an 18-month to two-year construction phase, and we aim to be actually starting initial mining operations, what's termed ramp-up, where you start commissioning the plant in around 2018. So that's our time frame. It may seem a long time, but this is the nature of developing large base metals projects. They are typically a sort of a 7 to 10-year process. But the good thing about our time frame is we believe the next 18 months to 2 years is going to be challenging in terms of the nickel price environment, and that is the time to be developing and building these projects at the bottom end of the cost arena. And you want to then be bringing the project into production as nickel prices start to increase, so that you get the maximum nickel price in the early years to pay back your capital. And if you look at all of the analyst forecasts and banks forecasts, sort of 2017, 18, 19, we're going to start to see tightening on the supply sides. Underlying demand will have worked out the oversupply in the system, and we should see some very interesting nickel pricing as this project goes into the production cycle.
Okay, so you mentioned the pre-feasibility studies. Can we go through some of the figures there, please, Jeremy? I know it was a while back, but can we go through before the Glencore thing? Can we look at that first?
Absolutely, yeah. We completed the pre-feasibility study in Q1 2014. We had a net present value, NPV, at around $520 million, with an internal rate of return of 20%. It's got a long mine life, 25-plus years. After payback of capital and taxes, it generates $1.7 billion of free cash flow and pays the capital back in around four and a half years. Since then, we've acquired the Glencore project, and that will allow us to increase the overall nickel grade in the first 10 years to hopefully over 2%. And that will have a major positive impact on the net present value, the payback periods and rates of return. So what we're now working on is integrating the Glencore project. It's running through into next year. And early next year, we will have an updated set of pre-feasibility numbers. And we're fairly confident that there will be a marked step up in the economics of the project, which is very exciting.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I say, if everything goes to plan here and we see a deficit and the price is, you know, hardening, solidifying in a few years' time, ideally, you know, in your mind, I know it's hard to say this, but where do you see the value of the market cap of the business, say, in about five years' time?
Well, so that's if I look into my crystal ball,
yeah.
I think that the best thing to do is to look at some benchmarks.
Yeah.
We know that the last major nickel laterite project that was acquired in Brazil was a company called Caneco Resources. It was a TSX company. Very, very similar stage of development and sort of history to ours. They spent around $35 million developing the project through to feasibility stage. And in 2007, they were acquired for $850 million by Vale. And that's now producing. It's 120 kilometers north of us. So that's a very good benchmark. That was an $850 million transaction. And as you say, we're valued at around sort of $18 to $20 million today. If you look at some of the research notes that we have out there, FinCap, et cetera, have target prices of sort of 15 pence on the current level today. So you can see there are many multiples in terms of value build in this project. But you have to be realistic. In the current climate, you're not going to get those multiples, and you've got to basically be there for this midterm. It's a three-year story from today, but we're fairly confident during that time frame that we will be able to deliver these milestones, which then translate through to value steps and in share price.
Yeah, and that's...
But I think it's important that... Sorry, go for it.
Go on. It's important what? Go on.
No, I think for the investor, it's very important when you're looking at a company. Number one, do you have a real project that can be developed and work and make money at bottom end pricing, whatever the commodity is? And we do have that. Do you have a team that can deliver and have delivered in country before? And we have that. And finally, obviously, you've got to have the relevant financial support to see you through the period of turbulence. And also, then obviously, you've got to see a financing route going forwards, and we believe we can. So I think they're key factors, and that stands Horizonte apart from a number of peer groups, that this will go the distance.
Yeah, so you said there, so on current cash, you know, reserves you have there, you said what, how long could you go for without needing to raise again?
I mean, effectively, we can run for 24 months longer if needed, but then that puts you into sort of a skeleton. You're not doing a lot of work on the project. So the aim is that we're advancing the project, and we would like to see at some point next year the next round of financing in place to take us through to the next stage of development, and we're working a number of angles there.
Yeah, so the trouble is, it's the environment, isn't it? Because at the moment, there are a lot, I know, of good value plays out there, but there's the uncertainty of the commodity prices, and we're saying, will we see a further downturn? Because, of course, the softening of demand because of China slowing down, and that's the problem. Even though people can see, for example, your company right now is a good value play, they think, well, we don't know when this cycle will start to turn upwards. And, I mean, you know, what's best case scenario? What's worst case scenario? Because, I mean, can you see it changing next year or the year after? What do you think?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. Are we at the bottom of the commodity cycle? And it's not my place to call that. I've obviously got a view, and I believe that we are towards the bottom of the price range. And why do I say that? And I'm focusing mainly on my space, nickel, for example, because I think the statistics out there today is that around 70% of the current operations are not making money at the current price range, which means those operations can't go on indefinitely not making money. So that means that that will start to take supply out of the cycle. China obviously has slowed down, but you are building on a much larger base, and there is still demand going on there. The issue we have at the moment is we have significant nickel inventory built up on the LME. So until that oversupply is worked out of the market and you get supply-demand fundamental sort of balancing, we're not going to see an uplift in pricing. Having said that, it can happen very quickly, and nickel typically moves very quickly. So coming back to your question, when is the point to enter Horizonte, or when is the point to enter another stock? If you believe you're towards the bottom, it doesn't take a lot to tighten up that supply-demand side and see increases in pricing. But I think you've got to be realistic. The next 6 months is going to be difficult. You may see further decreases in pricing before we see recovery. I mean, that's the nature of where the world is at the moment.
Yeah, okay.
And you've got to make a decision point. If you go in today and you lose 5, 10%, but overall you're going to see a significant increase over 12 to 24 months, that's a call that an individual investor has to make.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well let's go through three reasons why, for example, now. Before we get to that, before we get to the three reasons why someone should invest in your company, is there anything else you'd like to point out? Is there any highlights or exciting, things?
Yeah, I think the other very exciting piece of news that we released in early November was we completed our piloting to produce ferronickel. That was another major milestone. We treated 240 tons of ore through a pilot plant that exists in Brazil. It ran for 11 days, 24 hours a day, and we produced high-grade ferronickel at a whole range of different grades. And that's very important because that's another big de-risking step. People want to see that the process route that you're going to produce to use or produce your metal works and there are no critical flaws. And we were very pleased with the results, and it actually exceeded our expectations. If you go onto our website, there's a nice little video clip there showing the process. And to give you a feel, this wasn't just a sort of a bench scale campaign. This was a major industrial scale undertaking. So that was very exciting.
Do you know what I want to talk about? I think you undersell yourself a bit, because last time we spoke, I was quite surprised as to how old you are. How old are you, Jeremy?
I'm 38, so I'm not really that young anymore.
That is younger, but what are you doing? I mean, do you know what? I think this is a positive on your side. To make it to where you are at the moment, at age 38, you've got a very sensible head screw on your shoulders there. And, you know, how did you get to become, basically at the head of this, company at your age?
Well, I think it's very interesting. I actually started Horizonte when I was 28, 29. So it's been a long journey, and these companies typically are a long time in the build phase. But before that, I was working in Peru on the exploration side, Dominican Republic, and then ran a gold mine in Sweden. And that was a similar, when I started, it was a similar point in the downturn to where it is today. And there was a fundamental lack of people. The opportunity came up to move into the corporate side and to build up Horizonte, which I've done. And it was really a learning experience. This has been a learning experience, and I've been involved in a number of companies since. But I think it does give you a very good grounding if you've worked across not only exploration but production, and you've been through the ups and downturn cycles. And you can really understand what you need in terms of an asset and what the ingredients are in terms of management, strong shareholder support, to build these companies to actually accrete value going forwards and survive these tough market positions. So I suppose it was being in the right place at the right time, and again, another downturn, which meant that there was limited people to actually do these particular jobs.
Wow. Well, okay, so give us the big sell. I mean, if I'm a person, like I said now, a lay person who just listened to the podcast or just learned about your company, give us three reasons why they should consider investing in you.
Number one, we have a tier one, let's call it a tier one world-class asset now owned by the company. The project has been de-risked. It's moving into the feasibility stage, so all the early stage risks around exploration have been removed. You've got a very strong shareholder base. The company is funded, and there's a strategy to take this through to production, which effectively de-risk and gives shareholders a level of support and comfort in terms of where they sit. So I think it's a very good point to look at these companies. As you say, they're undervalued, and everybody will say that. But I think if you look at the real value that sits in Horizonte, it has the potential to offer multiple returns in terms of people's investment at this point in the cycle.
Marvellous, Jeremy. Like, you know, I think you've done a good job there. Like I said, the only issue is, at the moment, is the uncertainty of the environment, of the commodity environment. But like you said, it's cyclical, and we should all learn that. And sometimes, you know, some of the best investors take advantage of this uncertainty, don't they? And so that, you know, and it's almost the people who are scared to get in miss out. Like you said, there can be an aggressive bounce, and it can change overnight. And so it's almost like putting a stake in the ground. And I think with all investing, you know, if you're not quite sure, like anything, you know, do your own research, then scale in slowly. So I just think that's a valuable piece of advice. But Jeremy,
absolutely, and as I say, I mean, the I have not seen in my career to date the level of discount available in terms of what's available for shareholdings in terms of acquisitions today. There's some phenomenal value opportunities around. And I think you just look at our Glencore transaction. If you look at what the value on that project was 5 or 6 years ago versus what we acquired it for, it's a unique transaction that we probably won't get that opportunity again.
Yeah, what was the value on it 5 years ago, for example?
I think the total spend on the project was just under $80 million, and we acquired it for $8 million, and of that, $2 million was payment up front. If you go back beyond that, I mean, you can have a look around on the internet. There were some very significant valuations placed on the project when it was transacted between Falcon Bridge and Xstrata, and then again between Xstrata and Glencore. So it's a very exciting time for us.
Jeremy, lovely to speak to you again, and by all means, come back on when you have some more news.
Fantastic, great speech, many thanks.
That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Like I said, please don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation. Do your own research. There will be a weekend podcast. It's a bit more lighthearted with Pete and Steve, who are newer to investing than I am. I started a bit before them, but they're in the markets. Pete was for a while, then Steve jumped in a couple of months back, and he admitted he hadn't listened to one podcast he'd been on until about a couple of months back. But we'll be doing that on the weekend, and because it's Saturday, Sunday. So hope you enjoy that. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The ADBFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.